Is it really that important to eat organic?
What is conscious parenting?
Does homeopathy actually work?
Oh God, the flu. How do I beat it naturally?
How do I prepare for birth?
What are the benefits of meditation?
This is Healthy Happy Home, the podcast community that offers discussions and solutions for a fully conscious and integrative approach to living and parenting. We will explore and open up the topics of natural health and well-being, holistic parenting, consciousness, and work-life balance to empower you to live your healthiest, happiest life.
We're so grateful that you're joining us on this journey. We'd love it if you could take the time to rate, review, and subscribe. It will help other people to find us so that we can grow our Elevation Nation. This season of Healthy Happy Home is sponsored by Mega Home Water Distillers, the most reliable and efficient home drinking water distiller.
Mega Home are kindly offering listeners of the Healthy Happy Home podcast a 5% discount. Just use the code HHH5 at checkout. Thank you to Mega Home.
We're so excited to be sitting here with this week's guest and to hear everything she has to share with us. Mira Manick is an author, well-being expert and cook. She is the owner of Chai by Mira, a beautifully soulful space inside Chai Yoga in Soho, serving spice-inspired lattes, delicious smoothies and wholesome Buddha bowls.
Mira's book, Saffron Soul, features healthy vegetarian recipes, and she has just published her second book, Prajna, perhaps the most beautiful looking book to ever grace my bookshelf. And even more important than its aesthetic attributes, it can and should truly be seen as a template guide to healthy living by offering ways to incorporate the ancient wisdom of Ayurveda into our modern lives.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We're really excited to have you. Can we just start out with you telling us a little bit about your journey and how you came to Ayurveda?
So for me, Ayurveda, I used to think of as a destination. I'd go to India, I'd travel in India, and then every time I went as a in my late teens or 20s, my father would tell me to go to the next Ayurvedic resort that he'd discovered and he wanted me to go to. And at the time, I was going through a lot of my own health issues, whether it was putting on weight, digestion, acne, all those things. And I used to think of Ayurveda as something that would cure it or go for, you know, a week-long retreat and feel better after it. And I would always feel better because it would put me into that strong position nutritionally again, and sometimes they'd say, oh, the spots will get worse before they get better, and they would get worse. You just don't know what's going to help. And I would go and do these different retreats, and I used to think of it as a destination, and I didn't realize that you can actually incorporate Ayurveda. And Ayurveda is a lifestyle, but you've got to live these different rituals, these different practices, the different rules accrue to Ayurveda in your daily life, and you can do that. And it's only later when I sort of found myself, rediscovered my own health, maybe in my sort of late 20s, that I actually started understanding what Ayurveda was about. And I started doing yoga. And obviously, yoga goes very hand in hand with Ayurveda. And living abroad, traveling, I was actually a travel journalist at the time. And traveling made my digestion worse. Mm. I'd always snack, and I was going off these media fads and being the ultimate culprit of, you know, snacking rather than, you know, people would tell us that snacking is better than, or little snacks throughout the day is better than having full meals.
And it's also so hard to eat healthily when you're traveling. I find that
totally.
I find like I don't stick to normal meal times and I just snack on things all day long.
But I thought because people tell us that snacks are better than meals all day long, I would just go by that. And I'd literally, firstly, traveling would make things worse because it dehydrates you, messes up the digestion a little bit. But then I'd get to the destination, I'd find a nice healthy cafe or something. And I'd always just devour, and I'd always have a sweet tooth, but I'd indulge it a bit more because I thought, oh no, it's okay to have a date, or it's okay to have a, you know, a protein board or a little bit of a cake because I'm really craving sugar or dark chocolate. But I think I didn't realize the accumulation of different sweet things. And I realized that the energy level dropping in the afternoon, which happened to me so often, was not because I was low in energy, but it was because I was sort of spiking up that sugar level, and then just suddenly I would drop. And obviously I didn't realize all these things. I just sort of thought I was being healthy and kidding myself. And I think anyone with food issues or food problems or bad relationship with food, which I had developed over time, tries to justify these things by thinking that they're doing the right thing. And I did that for years. And that's really, I mean, that that played a massive role in what I do now, because it's only when I realized what I was doing wrong, and it's only when I realized that actually I need to go back to home cooked food, to what I grew up eating, to Indian healthy food, that I rediscovered, or kind of just had a revelation that actually this is what I need, that this is what my body needs. And what I grew up eating was actually Ayurvedically wholesome and nutritious and very good for my body.
We try to move kind of into the modern and then realize actually things we've been brought up with, maybe.
Yeah, and it's almost weird to think that we thought like that, because it's almost like if I think of somebody thinking like that now, it's warped logic. Mm. Like, why would someone replace food for a Special K bar? And it's not like I don't ever have the odd granola bar, or it's not like I don't ever have sweet things. I do, but I'm so much more aware of it now, and it's taken a lot of discipline over the years. But obviously once you start getting into the rhythm of doing that and you become a little bit more disciplined with yourself, you can not only resist those things, but it's sort of, you don't even feel like having those things anymore.
Yeah.
And your taste buds change. I think for me, the big battle was actually changing from sweet to savory, because my natural instinct is sweet. And I think that was born from like my mom having so many sweet things and cakes, which she told me she did when she was pregnant with me. Whereas with my brother, it was all about pizzas and like savory things. And with my sister, it was all wholesome Indian food. So we've all gone off on different tangents. It's funny how these things play such a big role throughout your life. And it was only when I rediscovered all of, you know, the fact that I was doing it wrong and had this revelation, that I started over time learning all these recipes, these valuable treasured recipes that I'd grown up eating, you know, wholesome Indian Gujarati food, which was home cooked and simple, but very flavorsome, was quite amazing for me, because I sort of started experimenting with the spices, because I came from a point of real fascination with all this, even though it's natural to me and all these flavors were very instinctive and familiar. The way it was cooked and the processes that go into it being made were quite new to me, because I had never really understood it, even though I lived abroad and cooked to the odd dal and whatever it was, bean curry or whatever I made. I'd always call my mom up and be like, how do you make this? And it never really sunk into my brain how these spices work, or how the flavor combinations work, or that you can be experimental with it. So when I started experimenting with all these spices and the Indian cupboard, as it were, I created my own sort of treasure trove of recipes and started sharing them with the world on my blog, or the odd, you know, news article here and there. And I wanted to write a book, but I didn't realize that would take a lot longer than I thought I could do it overnight. But I think with books, you know, you either have to be a sort of celebrity or somebody well known, or you have to have a cafe or a restaurant or something, you know, to share with the world.
So you thought, I'll just open a cafe.
Yeah, I just thought, no, that happened later. I know, I never actually thought I wanted a restaurant or a cafe. That actually happened very randomly. But I did write the concept for the book very, very early on. And then I started experimenting, creating my own sort of concept of recipes and experimentation with the Indian spices. And having shared them, having created this blog, and finally getting the book, Saffron Soul, 3 years on, I would say, after the journey that I sort of started with food. My second book, which is the one which is more about Ayurveda, is about rituals. It brings together different aspects of my life, which I never thought I'd write this book, actually. I thought my second book would be a natural sort of development from the first one, which is a cookbook. And I actually wrote a concept for my next cookbook. And I'm so glad that it's obviously the book that it is now, because actually it brings together elements of my journey and so many different aspects of my life and integral to my well-being journey, not just food. So yoga, you know, movement, philosophy, spirituality, Sanskrit, because I went to the only school in London that taught Sanskrit. And that was sort of my gateway to understanding the scriptures, which have played a massive role in my life. And also just taking all these different things and creating a sort of concept for a survival toolkit, as it were, for life. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to have every ritual in the book, but picking your own sort of list of rituals and writing them down and maybe making a practice of them, because it's once you make it a practice that it becomes a sort of instinctive part of your life. And so the second book feels like a real natural progression, but I never thought I'd write it. So it's come as a surprise to me as well. And I absolutely loved the process of writing it, even though it was condensed into such a short time. And I had like crazy deadline, but by writing, by immersing myself in the book because I had this deadline, and by sitting there at my desk at home night after night writing this book and not seeing anyone because I knew that this deadline was there, actually was such an incredible experience, because I went into my own world and just didn't come out of it for like two, 3 months. And it just made me discover so much. So obviously I've studied the scriptures and I've done a lot of reading and I did a lot of research for this book last year because I was coming up with this concept. But actually sitting down and writing it was involved a lot of research where I went into depth with these subjects, because I cover some of those things in not so much detail, trying to extract the sort of right flavors and the right juice and the sort of pearls of wisdom from these different elements that I write about was quite, required a lot of research into those different areas. So that's my second book, and a long-winded way of saying that that's how my journey sort of transpired and how this second book sort of brings together so many different elements. And my first book also touches on Ayurveda, but it's not about it. Even though the food is Ayurvedic food, we didn't want it to be sectioned off into specific categories. We wanted it to be a beautiful cookbook that can lie on a coffee table without people thinking, oh, it's just a healthy cookbook.
I love the name Saffron Soul. It evokes just warmth, nourishment, and just bright colors and health. And
I do love it as well. Yeah. It's like, it's funny because saffron is not an Indian spice. It's traditionally Persian. But actually my, and bizarrely enough, I don't write about this in the book, but my family is Lohanas, which is one sort of, not like a caste, but a type of Indians who came from Afghanistan many, many years ago and purged through the route of Persia and through different countries and into India. And so they settled in India. And so our type of sort of Indians are actually not traditionally Indian skin coloured. As in we are, but that's why people sort of say to me, oh, you look more Mediterranean more Persian, like, or more Arabic. Yeah, because actually we're from sort of that region originally many, many, many years ago, obviously. And it's, I guess the spice is an ingrained thing.
Wow, that's such an amazing journey of self-discovery. Thank you so much for sharing. And so we did just touch upon it, but you just released your second book titled Prajna, Ayurvedic Rituals for Happiness. So could you just take us through, what is Ayurveda?
So Ayurveda is an ancient system of medicine that was used all over India, created thousands of years ago, and is so ingrained in the life and rituals and homes of Indians throughout India that it's almost, it is a lifestyle, and it's not so much something that I even realize, you know, I didn't know until more recently that actually everything that we've grown up doing is sort of Ayurvedic in a way, because it's sort of infiltrated into what we do, you know, whether it's the tongue scraping in the morning or, which is something I grew up doing. I don't ever know a time when I didn't scrape my tongue in the morning. And that's something that Ayurveda, or people who are into Ayurveda, now talk about. And that's why I realized it's Ayurvedic. I didn't know it was an Ayurvedic thing necessarily. So it's things like that that are ingrained in our own families. But even spices, like the way Indians cook with spices. Yes, it's true that Indian food can be unhealthy and heavy and rich, but that's the way it's made. Essentially, it's all Ayurvedic. The ingredients themselves are all Ayurvedic. The kind of, whether it's the oils we use or the grains, you know, using millet, for example, in the winter, that's because it's harvested at that time. And that's because it's a warming grain. Or, you know, which kind of rotis do you have in the summer? Or what kind of, or having, for example, having lassi. It's very, lassi is something that people have in the summer months because it cools the body down. And so those sorts of things are Ayurvedic, but they're just done. Like, they're just things that we've always done.
So throughout India, so they're not in a specific region then?
No, and it's amazing. It's actually just right now, if you think of Ayurvedic centres, and when you think of Ayurveda, I think of South India, because most of the Ayurvedic centres and spas and doctors are in South India, because the schools have sort of formed there. What actually happened in between is that when the English were ruling, they sort of said they banned Ayurveda in a sense, and then it came back in, and that's when the schools of Ayurveda developed after the English left in South India. But in South India is not where it all began, but it's where the concentration of sort of the schools and the spas and things are. And Ayurveda goes hand in hand with yoga But it's not the same philosophy. I mean, it is the same philosophy, but they're sister philosophies, if you know what I mean. So Ayurveda is an ancient system of medicine, essentially, but also of healing and well-being. And I think it's also about taking bits of wisdom, pearls of wisdom from different sources. You know, I know that obviously Ayurveda speaks about all the spices, and turmeric is probably one of the most championed out there. And obviously ginger is as well. But the way I picked up my ginger, sort of, you know, I have ginger every single day in hot water, the powder and powder form. And I also grate it into my tea and things. But that's because my Chinese doctor told me to have more ginger because it reduces inflammation. Now, maybe Ayurveda speaks about that, but it doesn't focus on it necessarily. So it's about picking up different things, and it can be confusing, but by doing one thing and seeing how that feels in your body, you'll realize. Yeah. Like my grandmother would always say, oh my God, ginger's very heating for the body. Like, don't have too much because it'll, you know, you'll have an outburst of spots maybe because it's very heating. Like, have a little bit. But I've been having a lot and it's not really done much for me. And I think my body, because I get cold so, so quickly and my circulation's not great, it gives me that inner warmth that I need.
Yeah. We were talking as well about how the lovely thing you mentioned in Ayurveda is, I love the way there's a kind of the sense of humour about Ayurveda and, you know, not taking things too seriously. So don't, you know, there's no point stressing about whether you're eating this right time or doing that. You know, you also need to kind of just be relaxed with it too.
Yeah, exactly. Because that will affect your digestion.
Yeah.
Your stress levels will affect how you eat and how you digest. And that's, I think, another thing that I mention in the book, which is that, yes, it's important to eat your biggest meal at lunchtime because it's in accordance with the sun. So when the sun's at its strongest, that's when you should have your biggest meal because that's when you digest the best. But in the modern day world, if you're working in the city or if you have a job where it doesn't allow you enough time to sit and eat that lunch, or you haven't prepared the lunch and you don't have anywhere nearby that sells the sort of or serves the thing that you need or want, then there's no point on trying to have a massive meal at lunchtime. You know, have whatever you need, maybe have a snack later, even though maybe Ayurveda doesn't talk snacks. About that. Have a couple of snacks, you know, have an apple, have something, have dark chocolate if you need to, and then have a big meal at dinner, but don't overdo it. Maybe have it slightly earlier and then play with it. So have 2 days where you could say to yourself, okay, I will make a change where I have my biggest meal on a Saturday at lunchtime and on a Sunday or on a Monday, whenever you can physically manage it. And then see how you feel on those days. And then Observe over time, you'll naturally start changing because you'll realize that that might be
the heavy late meal. You know, you sleep and you kind of wake up not feeling that refreshed sometimes. Because we loved all the rituals in your book. Mm. And we were just wondering, like, so what's your kind of morning? How does your morning start? What do you do?
So I get up and the first thing I do is try to just be in bed for 10 minutes, just not thinking about.
I read that today. Yeah,
just not like thinking about what's happened at night. Because often when I get up in a rush and I, you know, go straight to finish things, look at my phone, I forget to, and then things come back to me. Like if I'd had a dream or something comes back to me, or from last night. Whereas if I'm sitting in bed, like you're recalibrating things and you're sort of in that space of half asleep, which is quite nice. And then one of my friends was telling me, she said she first thing in the morning just spends 15-20 minutes without looking at her phone, just talking to God. She just says all this stuff and she just lets it all out. And she's like, I have this amazing conversation, which is really nice. Yeah, I mean, so I don't do that, but actually that's such a lovely thing
to do. It's just another form of meditation.
Exactly. Yeah. And another form
of not looking at your phone.
Exactly. It's so, oh my God, that just takes you away completely.
Yeah.
Just, and I do that. It's not like I never do that, but I'm making it more of a habit. And so that's the first thing. And then I do, I have water, I do breath work whenever I can. So I did it this morning, but I try and do, my favorite one is Kapalbhati, which is the one where you sort of breathe out and not in, and you like, it's like jerky.
It's kind of pumping.
Yes. So I do that and a bit, and if I have time, then I'll do the alternative nostril breathing.
So that links your right side of your brain and your left side
and
of your brain.
It balances you. Exactly. It's so lovely. Such a lovely thing to do. And actually half the meditation is about observing your own breath, slowing it down. And so that slows everything down. It puts you into that parasympathetic nervous system before you even start the day, which is really good because half the time you have these mini stresses before you leave the house. I think Rongan Chatterjee speaks about that in his book, in his second book, The Stress Solution, about these mini stresses, so many mini stresses that you have, you know, oh my God, I'm in a rush, I've got late, or I haven't got this, or I left my this here.
Yeah, oh God, there's a laundry.
Yeah, I didn't even manage it, or I've had a coffee, and, or where am I going to get this from? Or, you know, so many little things, or you're annoyed with somebody at home, or whatever it is, but you leave the house, even before you've left the house, you have so many of these little things that later on in the day, they're all going to catch up with you, and you're going to get stressed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's good to do that. I mean, it's good to spend that extra 10 minutes in the morning doing the breathing or doing the, you know, figuring your day out sometimes. Yeah. I think sometimes I want to start doing that more, because sometimes I'm like, okay, shall I do this first or shall I do this? Because half the time my day isn't always like appointment led. It's very much like I need to check into the cafe at some point. I have to do this. I have to get this here. I then want to do yoga class or a gym class. I then want to, I then have a meeting. So I try and figure these things
out. You end up trying, achieving that rather than just going from one thing to suddenly something else.
Exactly. And that's what I often have ended up doing. So I then would have, after my breath work, I would have some sort of concoction, a drink, whether it's ginger and hot water or lemon, ginger, and maybe apple cider vinegar. Recently, I haven't been doing apple cider, but I'm going to go back to it. I quite like how it makes me feel. Or lemon and ginger with a bit of honey, maybe. Just depends on the time of year and what I fancy having. So something like that.
So it's based on something what you warm. Fancy that day, not on a specific...
Recently, I've just been having a lot of just ginger in hot water because that's easy and it's sort of...
I've learned that now from you, and because you can just use the grated powder of ginger. Yeah, I did that today. I was like, oh my God, that was so quick.
So I always thought of grating ginger because that's how we... don't ever put ginger powder in hot water. It was only when I started seeing a Chinese therapist and she gave me a bag of ginger and she just said, you know, have this every single day. Even in the morning, if you can have half a teaspoon in hot water with a bit of coconut oil, that will just delay your breakfast for a while because it's good to delay breakfast sometimes. But I don't generally put coconut oil in it. I just
have it with the powder. It's delicious. It with the powder.
It's fine. And then I do have a coffee a day.
Oh, we were going to ask you about that, weren't we? Yeah, because I've got into coffee a bit. And I know, Lauren, you don't really have coffee. But you did mention coffee in your book. Yeah, so we were like, what's your take on coffee? Yeah.
No, I did. There have been times when I've let go of coffee and I've, you know, just had tea instead and not really had coffee. I don't think I'm addicted, but I do like it.
Yeah.
And I only have one a day in the morning at some point.
And so you enjoy
it. Yeah, so I quite like having coffee. I might do a couple of weeks without it now and again, which I like as well, because I think it's nice to break that routine.
But I think that's okay to do something that actually makes us happy, you know. There's a balance. My mum's favorite saying is, a little bit of what you fancy doesn't do you any harm, you know. And I think Tilly and I speak a lot about the difference between us constitutionally. I know you talk about the constitution a lot. From my remission, I've learned about my constitution and that it's a lot weaker than some other people's, because I have this genetic makeup that I have this gene mutation called MTHFR, and it means that my body doesn't detox very well. So I have to be very aware of what I put in my body, whereas Tilly can kind of, you know,
get away with it a bit more.
Yeah, she can get away with it. It's not going to affect her, you know. It's, you know, she can indulge a bit more. But I am a big believer, if something really makes you happy and it's not doing you that much harm, like if your daily coffee is what makes you happy, do that. You know,
exactly.
I'm not saying, like, if a daily cheesecake makes you happy, eat that cheesecake every day, you know.
That won't make you happy after a while, you'll start feeling sick.
If that's your thing, that's part of your rituals and part of your thing that makes you happy and gives you that. Yeah.
But then I try not to, like, there are times when I really want coffee with a breakfast. The breakfast is quite heavy. Like, I really want a nice, I don't know, yogurt, berries, a bit of granola. Not very often I have that. But if I'm having that, I'll try not to have coffee with that. I'll have it different, like, at separate times. So I'm not like,
so you're normally bunching everything up together. Breakfast, will you? Is that
normally
what you're saying?
So it really varies. I kind of try and have savory more often now, but about 3-4 times a week I won't have breakfast. I'll like delay it till around 11 or something.
Yeah,
and so it'll be like a brunchy, like a lunchy
type
breakfast.
I love doing that. Yeah.
Vegetables, tofu, some sort of a stew. In the cafe we often make a really nice sweet potato chickpea curry type of thing with quinoa. Sometimes I'll have that. I vary. I do mix it up, and I have eggs sometimes. I don't really have a recipe in the book which has eggs, because
you say that you can add egg.
I do have eggs sometimes. I've been through years where I've done no eggs. Like, I literally from the age of 12 till the age of 25 had no eggs, and most of those years I didn't even have them in cakes. So I was completely eggless, not vegan, but eggless for my own moral sort of reasons. And then I sort of changed my mind at some point. I've just flitted between having eggs and not having eggs over the years.
Yeah.
Because I grew up having them. My default mode goes back to them sometimes. Yeah. So.
It's very much about that, isn't it? What we've grown up being told we should believe, and that becomes ingrained in us until we kind of figure out what our own belief system is based on understanding our own body. Tilly and I were talking, and we talk about this stuff a lot, about, you know, there are so many schools of thoughts to each process, or to each, you know, staunch vegans will say that that is the best way to live, and ethically for sure I agree with that, and that, you know, any kind of animal products are not good for the body. Then you've got kind of on the other side the Western A Price ancient traditions side of things, saying that our bodies need animal proteins to thrive. You know, we never really know. There is research on both sides, strong research. So again, it comes down to this individualistic approach. What works better for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. What works better for you, and becoming more conscious of that, but also becoming more conscious of maybe having the more vegetables as opposed to replacing everything. If you, if your body needs animal protein, then, you know, the world is moving more towards that whole slightly less meat and more vegetables, because they're realizing the benefits of that, or the fact that you can't just survive on meat alone.
So, I don't think anyone could argue the fact that the planet would be a better place if people didn't eat meat. You know, I think that is
except the
truth.
People that love to eat meat.
No,
like,
do you know what? Do you know what? Even people I know that love to eat meat and will, you know, understand what
ecologically
it's doing understand what it's doing to the planet, and also understand that meat in large portions, or having a lot of meat every week, isn't good for you.
Exactly. So there's so many different arguments and reasons for why people switch and become activists, I guess.
But you're just saying, actually, just increase the vegetables and increase the good stuff, you know,
and
then naturally the bad stuff
again,
kind of
exactly
right?
Small changes will eventually result in the bigger changes. Small rituals, like, don't be over ambitious, unless you're that kind of person that needs to make a massive change. Like, if I'm addicted to coffee and I know I need to reduce it, like if I had three a day, I would then go to one a day. But how would I go to that one a day, or how would I go to zero a day? Start by reducing it by a third or something. That's, I think, the way to do it, as
manageable.
Opposed to having,
so be a bit more gentle on yourself.
Just say, okay, well, and maybe do, like, be aware of how many you're having, and then write that down, and then reduce it the next day, and maybe maintain that for 2 or 3 days, and then reduce it the next day, because, and see how that affects you. And like you said, if you journal it, or if you observe it, you'll see how it doesn't take the joy out of it. I think when I was actually doing my food journaling earlier this year, writing down every single thing I ate, because I was trying to deal with some of the issues that I have with food, and I realized that I still have retained some of those issues, writing it all down was so I found it really interesting. And then I got addicted to writing it down. I quite liked that. And then I have like a whole spreadsheet about what I ate for like those 3 or 4 months. And also then I started writing down how I felt, because obviously it's all about digestion and how you feel, and whether you're feeling sluggish. And my energy levels are very affected by what I eat and how I eat. So, I mean, I think everyone's up, but I just really became aware of that.
So did that become a ritual then, writing everything down? Is that part of your
I don't write everything down anymore, because I've become a lot better with my food. I think that was the idea
to
with the writing,
help you,
to help me get to this stage, and I've definitely become better. But I know where my weaknesses lie. I know that if I start having something sweet, I will literally want to keep eating something sweet. So I still try to not keep things around me that I know I will want to just indulge in. But writing it down it just gave me a process by
like an
which
awareness,
to,
I suppose.
Yeah, and I am a lot more aware, and I still take my Ayurvedic medicines for digestion and energy, because I do have a lot of energy depths during the day. I mean,
so if you're getting sick, or you feel like you're getting ill, what would you do then? To, you know, do you have like a little I feel like I'm getting a bit run down, I'm going to take this.
Yeah. So if turmeric, for example, like. Nowadays I will start putting turmeric powder into my morning concoction, or I'll start having turmeric in hot milk once a day. I often do that anyway. I like having that in the evening sometimes, and especially if I'm craving something sweet, then I'll have like a, you know, almond milk and oat milk is sometimes a little bit sweet anyway, so you add a bit of turmeric. And if I'm really craving something sweet, then I'll put a touch of agave or honey in it. But that really satisfies me.
Yeah.
And turmeric is so great for so many different things. So that's a good prevention thing. If I'm feeling like I'm about to get ill, then I will do the turmeric and hot water with honey, with lemon, lots more lemon and lots more lime, maybe some satsumas, and I just always crave vitamin C. But then I'll also have vitamin C, so I'll actually get tablets of vitamin C.
Oh, will you take some as well?
And I'll take that as well, because I know that that really helps when you're just about to get ill.
Yeah.
Because I know what I'm like, which is I go from bad to worse very quickly. So if I think I'm going to be okay doing the natural way, but actually if I do the full-on natural way, then within 5 days I'll develop close to bronchitis, basically.
Yeah.
So it all fills in my lungs very quickly.
Right. Okay.
So I try and just
prevent from getting there.
Yeah, to getting to that stage, because often I've had to take antibiotics in the past. So I don't want to get to that stage, because I know that happens to me.
We're interrupting this episode really quickly to bring you a message from our wonderful season sponsors. Tilly, check this out.
Oh, that's rank. What is it?
Nasty, isn't it? I was shocked too, actually. I've started using a Mega Home water distiller to purify my water. That chemical gunge you can see and smell is what gets left behind.
Oh, so normally you'd be drinking that.
Yeah. A distiller is the only way to create absolutely pure drinking water.
So what are the benefits of having a Mega Home distiller?
Well, the Mega Home distiller eliminates known nasty toxins like fluoride and chlorine. And it's one of the few distillers that actually removes estrogen too.
And so you reckon that Mega Home is the one to get?
Definitely. The Mega Home is more compact, it doesn't get so hot, and they have a service centre here in the UK, so any problems you can phone them, talk to them and get it sorted.
Well, what about the filters I can buy in the supermarket?
Great question. I actually did a lot of research on this before going ahead with the Mega Home. So many of the store-bought filters and the more expensive home filtration systems we hear about don't actually get rid of the most harmful toxins, they just improve the taste.
Oh, I bet it's super expensive though.
Au contraire, my friend. It's actually super affordable. Just have a look on their website.
Okay, so how much water does it distill per day?
Well, there's five of us in our house and I do two distillations a day, which gives us more than enough.
Oh, it sounds totally brilliant. I want one.
Well, it's your lucky day, Tilly, because Mega Home are offering listeners of the Healthy Happy Home podcast a 5% discount. Just go to megahome-distillers.co.uk and enter the code HHH5 at checkout.
Can't wait.
Has yoga always been part of your kind of...
No,
lifestyle.
Actually, no. We didn't grow up doing yoga at all. But when I was traveling in India once, I must have been, I don't know, 18 or something, I went to learn yoga with a lady called Yoga Mother in India, in Jaipur. And she was like tiny. She was 75 or something. And I did one-on-one classes with her. And it was just incredible because her yoga practice was so spiritual. And then I'd sit there and she'd actually sing to Shiva and play this instrument while she sang, and I'd sit with her to do her prayers with her. But yeah, I met her and I learned. I think I spent about 7 to 10 days with her, literally every single day learning yoga.
What a gorgeous way to first learn yoga.
So that's my first experience with yoga. And then I lost it again, but it was amazing. Like, I loved learning, and that was my first practice. It was very basic, because I think the basic form of yoga is, you know, those particular asanas in a particular sequence, like Ashtanga yoga, basically. I didn't know there were all these. I mean, I think at that time there weren't these different types. It was just like yoga was yoga. And then I don't know when I started doing yoga again. I think I went to a lot of Ayurvedic retreats and did yoga at those places.
Yeah.
And then I finally discovered yoga when I lived in Uganda and Dubai, because I became part of the yoga communities there. Mm-hmm. And then moved to London and found it with Try Yoga. And I became editor of the first ever yoga magazine in the Middle East while I was out in Dubai as well. So that really brought me into the... Because I interviewed a lot of yogis there. Catherine Budig from America had come to Dubai, so I organised a photo shoot with her. So I sort of met a lot of yogis and went and did a lot of yoga at that time. And I did an article, I did a feature, I think, in the first issue of that magazine, which was called Yoga Saved My Life. And I interviewed people to do that. And I literally think that at that time, yoga did save my life.
Yes. Wow. Funny.
It was quite amazing to
life recreating
that,
art.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So what are, because there's many different types of yoga and it can get a bit confusing. So if someone that wants to start and just get into yoga to make it as part of their, you know, practice, just to enhance their life, what are the different types?
So I often do vinyasa flow, which is because I like doing different sequence every time, and I quite like that different teachers do different sequences. But essentially, Hatha Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga are sort of the traditional practices. Ashtanga, you go through a flow, And that's like in the morning when they say in yoga studios, it says Mysore practice. That's basically people going through Ashtanga practice again and again. It's the same sequence.
Is that
sequence.
Like sun salutations?
Yeah. Sun salutation one, two.
Is that, so it's a more continuous practice.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't really, so it's more kind of cardio, is it, as well? You get more sort of out of breath doing it.
Yeah. It depends on the pace you go at, I guess. But Ashtanga and Hatha, I mean, you basically, vinyasa classes are formed of the same asanas, but just may be in a slightly different sequence. Or if it's an advanced class, they might put in other asanas, which are not necessarily part of your daily yoga practice,
yeah.
or which are a little bit more advanced, maybe inversions and things like that. So I would just say start off by trying different classes.
Mm.
Go for a couple of, you know, go for an Ashtanga, go for a vinyasa. Try different teachers, because teachers really vary.
Yeah.
You know, with vinyasa especially, the teachers will be so different and they'll bring in different asanas, and some people will make it more advanced. And hot classes, I think they're, my body in the winter time, I love a hot class.
Mm.
I don't like Bikram because I don't like, again, I'm not into that same sequence thing. Although there's, I think people should follow the same sequence. I think it's great. And that's why Mysore is very good. But I quite like going and doing a vinyasa class in a hot room,
mm.
just because I really like that heat. My body, you know, I love going to the steam room in the winter. Mm. So I love going to a hot class. And I recently actually got back into it.
And about kind of these yoga brunch clubs and supper clubs that I know you do a lot of them. Are they a good, you know, if someone might be feeling a bit daunted by, you know, I really want to try this and I love that there's, you know, going to be all this healthy food as well, and I'd like to try the yoga, but they might be a bit daunted by the prospect of doing being a beginner. Can they do those classes?
Yes. So that's why I think with those sorts of events, you sort of have to come in with that notion of knowing that everyone will be at different levels. And therefore the teacher will cater for that.
Right.
So if you're really advanced, you may find that too basic but essentially it'll be a flow, and it just won't include the extra poses, like the harder poses.
Mm.
It won't have too many inversions. So the person
and just
I'm
explain
doing,
what are inversions?
Inversions are like headstands, like going upside down, basically. Mm-hmm. So headstands, handstands, anything that involves going the other way. So, and also balancing poses, they're quite hard, you know, whether it's the crow or...
can kind of, if you're finding the class easy, you can kind of hold on for a bit longer. But if you're finding it too hard, you can just lie down.
Right? Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's what they always say.
That's the thing. You just don't compare yourself with other people.
Yeah.
What I mean is that if that teacher is bringing in too many of those things, then you're sort of in the class feeling like you're a little bit left out, like you
yeah.
want to flow,
yeah.
but you can't sort of
yeah.
thing. But in a lot of these yoga brunches that I do, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, they make it very available to all.
Yeah.
So while they know that most people will come having practiced some level of yoga, they also know that certain people might come who have not done any yoga, and therefore
yeah.
they will cater for all.
Yeah.
So the one I'm doing this weekend is with a lovely lady called Lily Silverton, who's really great at like...
And I met you through Lily. That's how I met you.
Oh, my God. Yes, yes. So she... Yes, I'm doing my yoga retreat with her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's really great at being good with... She's great at like teaching all levels together and bringing in that calmness of practice.
I love her message as well, though, because she's very much about kind of the body positive.
Yes, exactly.
Movement, which I think is so important, especially in yoga, because my experience of yoga from the past has been very much these amazing kind of yogic looking
yes.
people with these, you know, extreme yogic physiques. And I now know many yoga teachers who are probably some of the best teachers I've ever learned from who don't have that physique. And that
is
telling us that that's okay. Anyone can do yoga. And what is yoga, really? You know, it's not about the asanas and what position you can get in, is it? It's
no.
about what it's doing for your mind through your body.
Is it, feel like they invented yoga so that then you could do practice yoga and then you could be comfortable
yes.
to sit and
yes.
meditate?
Yes, meditate, exactly.
That's the whole point of yoga,
so
isn't it?
The achievement, yeah, exactly. That's the end goal, to be able to sit in a position and be able to meditate for that long.
Yeah, so it doesn't. It's not about how you're looking, is it? No.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm probably more able to sit now and meditate. Much more than I was before, or sit still and actually observe the mind and sit in a position actually
because you're doing more yoga, so you're a bit more flexible.
Can do it, yeah, exactly.
I know when I did yoga through my whole pregnancy, and I did it every day, and I made it it was easier at the time because I just had, you know, the one child.
One is none, as my sister always says.
Yeah, and you know, and I was able to do that. Now I'm finding it a lot harder, but the point was is that
it enabled me to then be very supple for my birth.
Oh, wow. Yes,
right?
Yes.
So it was for a purpose, but you're doing it for one purpose and that purpose is expanding to so many different other things, because I felt calmer. I felt more supple. I felt, you know, I just felt better in myself with everything. My digestion was better. My mental state was better. My belief in my ability to birth my baby at home was more, you know, was more pronounced because I'd been doing all this stuff. So that's a real Ayurvedic thing for your daily rituals, right?
Yes, exactly. So much so. And I mean, even if you can't incorporate daily yoga, you know, doing the stretches, because for me my body gets really, really tight.
Yeah, mine too.
My back, and I just want a massage all the time. Like, I literally, I used to actually review spas, so I kind of got addicted
what
to
great massage. Job. I think I'd quite like to do that.
It was
I'll take over your job.
So I do love having massages, but the point is that to reduce that sensation by doing a certain number of stretches in the evening or holding them for long. So doing a bit of yin yoga.
You know, I love yin yoga. Yeah.
It's great. So if you can just hold those positions and do those things in the evening and make it a ritual so that it's a nice thing to do. It's not just something, you know, maybe put some music on, put a candle on and make it like something that you...
Something you look forward to as opposed to it being a chore.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot my stretches tonight. Yeah. I'm too late. You know, like, make it something you really want, you know, make sure the room is warm and you actually want to do it.
I couldn't believe when I first went to a yin yoga class that actually just lie and hold like one or two positions and they put like a lavender eye mask on you. And that's like, this is an exercise class. This is like the best thing ever.
I know.
Just lie down, don't do anything.
But also holding those, sometimes in a yin yoga class, if they're strong enough or, you know, the certain positions that you do are like they really stretch you out, but if you do them and you hold them for a while, like for example the pigeon, if you hold that for a long time it can get really uncomfortable, but then you really
you have to keep releasing into it.
Exactly, you push through it, you and it's uncomfortable, but at some point you release into it, and that's such a lovely feeling,
being comfortable in your discomfort.
It's like because you're supported, aren't you, in the stretches, which is makes it actually quite nice, but makes it quite challenging.
Oh my God,
but
doing
too.
A yin when someone can actually press you down, well, that's the best part. Yeah. Like, I love it when someone just literally just puts a whole body weight on you and really just presses you down so your whole hip opens up. Yeah. Like,
it's
crazy.
Like massage and yoga mixed
in. Exactly.
Yeah. And then some of your chai tea on the side.
Lovely. Perfect. And doesn't that bring it back to what we were saying before about don't see it as a chore? You know, put the music on, you know, light some incense or some candles or something and make it part of your daily ritual, to make it something that you enjoy as opposed to a chore. And I definitely benefit from that. And when, you know, when Tilly was saying before about adding this sprinkle of humour, and she does that and she teaches me about being more, you know, just being kind of a bit lighter with things and a bit not taking things so seriously. And Tilly's very good at that.
If we look at our text messages, I'm often saying, oh, that's fine then,
don't worry, it will be fine. And I'm like, but we've got these deadlines and we've got all this editing to do and we have to, you know, and this needs to be done, that needs to be done, hold on, here's my schedule. She's like, okay, will you print one out for me, it'll all be good. Yeah,
so funny.
Yeah,
and it's need a bit of both, don't you?
Yeah, we definitely do. It's such a good balance.
It's such a good balance, because otherwise I get too serious. But I'm aware of it.
Exactly.
So I try to bring it back, you know. But no, I do. I need this reminder of constantly.
Sometimes it's really nice to like just stick something up on your wall. Like, you know, if there's a really nice saying you like, or an affirmation that you want to repeat, but you forget. So write that down and it'll become something on your wall, which you'll remember always. But also when you do the evening stretches, like, if you don't get a chance to do them and you're watching television, you can do the stretches then as well. Like, it's not a big deal if you don't create your own space, because often that whole thing of creating a space and making sure you're sort of going
into it. It's the chore in itself, isn't it?
You might think, that might feel daunting to you. So start off by just doing it anywhere and everywhere. Or do it sometimes like that, and sometimes while you're watching television.
Because you mentioned the roller that you lie on. That's great, then, isn't it? You can just buy those, the foam rollers, and they help you really stretch out, don't they? You can just it's like a little massage and a bit of yoga mixed together. Yeah.
But wherever it's hurting, to hold that roller in that position with your sort of leg open, or there's so many different ways of doing it. And if you just once learn, or I'm sure there are YouTube videos to show you, but a couple of times teachers have taught me how to do certain things and release certain areas. And so once you've got it once, you can just do that.
Yeah. That's quite easy to do at home because you can just stick it on the floor, can't you? Yeah.
We're looking at Ayurveda as being kind of a set of ideas to enhance our daily lives. What are the fundamentals of it that, you know, because we're talking about an individualistic approach, but really what are the fundamentals that everyone can do on a daily basis to enhance and enrich their lives?
I would say, firstly, sprinkling, like you said, humour. No, sprinkling spices into things, because I think that's a really big thing. There's so much benefit in spices, in each and every spice. Cumin seeds, mustard seeds, fenugreek, asafoetida, turmeric, ginger, garlic, chili, you know, maybe chili. You don't have to do chili. In fact, Ayurveda doesn't really promote that much chili. But the point is, there's benefit to everything. And by putting a bit more of that into your food, not only will you make it more flavourful, but you will benefit nutritionally, and digestion will be better, because every single spice has some digestive boosting sort of ingredient.
And I guess the spices are not expensive either, are they?
They're not. You do need to sort of roast them or fry them a little bit before adding whatever it is, and therefore you'll end up eating more of those vegetables because they taste better. And then also sprinkling these things into your water. So if you're going to have water, maybe put some cumin seeds or boil some cumin seeds in water one day and drink that, because half the time our issues are related to the gut. Mm-hmm. I mean, not always, but you know, the gut brain axis, and more people are complaining about gut issues now than ever before. And so how do you just help
yourself? It's one thing that we can use to aid our gut health.
Which spice was it that you said
so
to do?
So sometimes I'll boil cumin and fennel seeds together in hot water and just drink that, and I'll chew on those seeds as well. You don't have to chew on them.
So do you like boil them in, just put them in a saucepan and boil them for like a minute or?
Yeah, you can either do that, or if you just putting hot water in a flask, put them in there.
Okay.
Or, you know, overnight, put them in a pan with hot water, and in the morning it'll be cold, and you just pour it into your bottle of water, and you drink that water. Yeah. I quite like chewing on fennel and cumin, and they've both got very good properties. Fennel is very cooling, and both of them are very good digestively.
So I use fennel seeds in the water for the kids when they were babies. When they get colicky, or stomach aches, and they're getting a bit gassy, and you just boil the water with some of the fennel seeds, like you said, and then give it to them when it's cool, and that really helps.
Yeah, and after meals, if you've ever noticed in Indian restaurants or Indian homes, after a meal you'll be offered fennel seeds to eat. Sometimes they'll be covered in sugar.
Defeats the object, right?
Yeah, but it's to freshen the mouth, to freshen the breath, and to help with digestion after a meal. So we still chew in them at home. So after a meal, we'll have our roasted fennel seeds at home. We have it, you know, lying there next to.
So you just have like a little. You just put your hands in.
Yeah. Well, we have a little jar. We go like this. You know, a little bit in our palm, and we go like that.
Oh, do you? Nice.
And like, no, sorry, just that. Like, I'm not really explaining this properly on a podcast, but I'm mimicking the action. Yeah.
You just throw them in your mouth.
So you would roast those fennel seeds, though.
Yes, firstly. My mom roasts them. I've actually never roasted myself, but I've seen my mom roast them. She basically roasts them with a bit of salt and a bit of turmeric. Mm. No, a little bit of turmeric, not much. And a bit of lemon.
Okay.
I'm not sure the reason for the lemon. I think it could just be like just the flavour, but she does
lemon's
it with a bit
preservative,
of lemon.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe. Yeah, so maybe. I've not actually asked her why she puts lemon, but yeah, she puts a bit of lemon, a bit of salt, and a bit of turmeric.
So what's the next thing in the.
Then I would say yoga. So some level of stretching in yoga. If you can't do yoga, if you don't like yoga, some people just don't take to it, that's fine. But just try and incorporate some stretching, because it will prevent injury. It'll prevent those backaches. And then check in with your super happy and going through life, rolling through everything, having a sense of gratitude. No, there's no need for posture. And include some movement, whatever that movement is, you know. Obviously, if you love walking and running, do that. Jog outside, get some fresh air. Connecting with nature is so important, you know. And then I would say, for the mind, trying some form of meditation, whether that's going to a sound bowl meditation class or sitting at home for 5 minutes and just observing the thoughts and slowing down the breath. So focus on the breathing a lot.
Breathing would be another one.
Breathing would be a big one. Yes, breathing and meditation, I would say. Or breathing, just full yeah. stop, because that can be just meditation. Yeah. So put some music on, put a podcast on, put one of the morning ragas on that I've mentioned in the book.
I was in town walking to a meeting yesterday, listening to them on Spotify.
You.
Yeah, I love all that anyway. Both of my births with my children, I was chanting, wow. and we had Indian classical music and kirtans playing, and
so nice.
Yeah, and it just it does, doesn't it? It raises your vibrational frequency. It's just, there's something scientific to it for sure.
Coming back to one more ritual, is yeah. I would say gratitude. I know people talk about gratitude a lot.
Oh, it's a big
but
one.
I think it's really nice to have a sense of abundance in life as yeah. opposed to a sense of not having enough. And that creates it. Just remembering a few things you might be grateful for. You don't even have to write them down. It's nice to write them down. But just even out loud, like, okay, thank you for this and thank you, you know. Yeah. And maybe you're not thanking God. You could be thanking life. It doesn't matter. Mm. But just remembering a few things that happened in your day or the week or generally in life. And you could just send a prayer out to somebody. You know, it's just something where you're giving thought to something else other than yourself and takes you out of your own head a little bit, which I really quite like. And I think for me, when I was, you know, going through my harder years, what I realized is quite nice is waking up with I didn't always do this, but waking up with a bit of a smile.
Yeah.
Forcing yourself sometimes to do that, but also being grateful for certain things, or remembering to be grateful, puts a smile on your face,
yeah,
which is also really nice. And then it becomes automatic. So it might be a normal happy time in life and you might be doing that, and that might feel okay to do. But then when it comes to the harder times, a small action like that or a small mind shift like that can really elevate your sense of positivity or negativity through that day.
Lovely, because your gratitude creates your attitude, right?
I love that
gratitude.
I'm sure I've heard that.
I've taken it from someone else. I liked
how you said that it creates a sense of abundance, because just by thinking, appreciating what you already have, that's really nice, because it's very materialistic, this world, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so people, you're always thinking you need all the stuff, so actually to make yourself feel abundant just by changing the way you think about things in the morning is a pretty good way to do it.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And that's not going to mean quick. That the rest of the day, everything, you're going to be like super happy and going through life, rolling through everything, having a sense of gratitude. No, there's no need for trying to set yourself that task either. But I think waking up and just remembering a few things before you leave home that you are grateful for will just set a different tone for the day. And you don't need to be too ritualistic about it either. You can just make it like, maybe you can initially be ritualistic about it and then it'll just become a part of who you are and you'll do it without even thinking
about it. Because like everything else we've spoken about, you know, it makes you feel good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you might know. Do it when you're feeling a bit stressed or not happy about something. You might think, okay, I can use one of those, one of the toolkits.
Yeah. But also all these things seem like different rituals, but a lot of them can be done just together. Like you could be doing your breathing mindfully while thinking about few things that you're grateful for while listening to morning ragas. Like you could be doing a lot of these things together.
And on your roller.
I'm stretching at the same time. Sounds like a game of Twister.
That's quite good.
A spiritual game of Twister. So we do have to think about wrapping it up. We do have listener questions. So Joe says, how can we stick to a routine of rituals when we have very young children at home and our own preferred routine goes out the window?
So
I'd like to know the answer to this. Yeah.
Yes. Good question, Joe.
See, I think it's really by being so hard on yourself about sticking to things, you almost lose a sense of ritual in life. Mm. And I think you can't be hard on yourself about that, because that's life taking over. If, for example, you've taken a vow of silence and your son comes up to you and asks you something, you've got to break it, because your son is your son. Like, do you know what I mean? I think you've just got to flow with it then and just not be too hard on yourself and try and incorporate what you can. It's like what you said, you find it a lot easier to do yoga when you had one child and now it's harder. And that's not a bad, it's not a terrible thing. Mm. Do what you can. Do 10 minutes rather than 30 minutes. Mm. But even those 10 minutes will make a little bit of a difference. So incorporate where you can. You know, if they're watching television and you're having to watch with them,
Do some breathing, maybe.
Do some breathing. Yeah. Like, do what you can and don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah. Or prioritise.
Prioritise.
Just cuddle them and enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it's really important to you, then make sure that your, husband looks after
your baby for like an hour while you go and take your walk if it's really important to you.
Yeah, so and actually mums probably don't do that enough.
Yeah,
do
that
they
comes
go?
Back to self-care.
Yeah, they probably need to do a bit more of that.
And yeah, I think that is it. And it's really hard finding the balance between knowing that you have to work on your self-care and also there literally not being enough hours in the day.
Yeah, so
it, I think it's about prioritising as well, the things that are important to you.
Or playing Spiritual Twister, doing a few of the things
I'm going to do that tonight.
I think Spiritual Twister is a new thing.
We should many things can you do in one go?
Can we patent that and make that a real game?
Know,
yeah,
someone would be really fun.
That's brilliant.
Okay, next question, Emily. This is from Emily. Mira, I love your book. You talk about simple, easy to digest foods a lot. So why is it that Indian food is so heavily spiced and can be so heavy?
Yeah, I think I've touched on this, but it's such an important one because that's how my whole thing started. When I was young, I would never go to an Indian restaurant because I would just know that I'd have a stomachache afterwards and I wouldn't be able to resist the naan bread, and that's what would affect me the most. Now I avoid all of that because it's all about how it's made, what they put in it. Sometimes in these Indian restaurants, they put colours in the food as well and they douse it in oil. So it's not just like the paneer is deep fried. They then fry it again in the curry and they add cream to it, which makes it very, very rich.
Yes,
and that's how they achieve those colours and those sort of that creamy texture. It's a bit too much. So be aware about what's going in your food and where you're eating maybe. Now, more than ever before, we have a real choice of Indian restaurants. Mm. So we can go to a South Indian restaurant, which is really great on the stomach because they have fermented dosa batters, which are delicious. And order it, maybe just say, can you please put slightly less oil? Be conscious of what you're ordering. You know, if you know naan bread doesn't work for you, don't order that. If you know you love some sort of bread with your dal or curry, then order the roti or ask for a whole wheat roti because they usually will have it. Mm. Dosa is made of lentil batter and rice. Sorry, a batter made of lentils and rice soaked and then blended together. And that's great for the body. Very Ayurvedic. But you can also get other types of dosa as well with nachni flour and with, so you just ragi flour and things like that. So it's really interesting. But also, if you, for example, you can pick between Indian restaurants, then go for the lighter one.
Yeah.
And then cooking at home is so much simpler because you can put whatever you want in it. So experiment with a few curries and a few different recipe books and find what works for you.
And Saffron Soul has a lot of those.
Yeah,
recipes,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what people say about it. They find it really easy to cook from Saffron Soul because they are such accessible recipes. They're not trying to recreate what you get in Indian restaurants. They're trying to recreate what I've grown up eating, which is simple Indian food. Mm. So for a lot of Indians out there, I think my book would be kind of basic. But for me and people of the likes of me and people who have not really cooked Indian before, it's not daunting at all.
Yeah, oh, I look forward to doing
it. Thank you.
I'm going to have to get that one. Another thing we've been doing with the podcast is having a little section called What We're Into. And so we were just going to ask you first, Mira, what you're into this week.
The winter's coming around and my body gets cold very, very easily and quickly. So I've recently started doing hot yoga again in a hot room and I just love it. I went for a class yesterday with one of my favourite teachers, James Raphael, in Soho. And it was a hot room and it was a lovely vinyasa class. And then also twice a week, I try and go to the steam room and sauna room just to warm up my body and open those pores up. And generally, it's a nice little detox. And taking baths. I love taking,
even
if they're short, I just like a quick
get warm up
hot bath in the evening.
You sound like me, like
up.
A cold person. Yeah, and you just want things to warm you up. Yeah, hot water
really
bottles in the
hot
winter.
Hot water bottles,
yeah.
Oh my God, yes. Oh. So that's my this week's thing because I've really just got into all of that finally.
Rediscovering your passion.
Get
for
back
it.
To it. Yes.
What are you into, Lauren?
Okay, so when I was reading Prajna, and I've been oil pulling for a few years, but got really slack on it. And I've been tongue scraping for about a year. My tongue scraper got, you know, they can get a bit rusty, don't they, the copper ones?
Yeah.
So it grossed me out a bit. But from reading your book, I was like, no, I'm going to be oil pulling and tongue scraping every day again. So that's what I've been doing. And I'm so happy about it.
Really?
It makes me feel good. Yeah.
Well,
so there are rituals that I've added to my morning that make me feel. And I do the oil pulling when I'm in the shower. But I think everything, for me, it rang true for me when I started doing it because it's about, the microbiome in your stomach, in your mouth. That, you know, it's such a big way of keeping us healthy. So if you keep that microbiome healthy in your mouth,
exactly.
then that's going to filter down to your gut.
So true.
And that's just, and as we know, our immune systems are in our gut. So that's what's going to keep us healthy. So,
exactly.
you know, not killing all that good microbiome in your mouth with these really strong mouthwashes, but instead, you know, using oil pulling. To get rid of the bad bacteria, keeping your own personal microbiome strong.
How long do you do it for?
probably about 10 minutes, I'd say, if I get the time.
So do you wander off doing other things?
Yeah, like I'm just in the shower and I'm, yeah, like getting dried and putting my creams on and, yeah, doing all of that. And then some little person will come up and be like, "Mommy," and I'll just have to...
Yeah.
Always make sure to spit it out down the toilet because it's coconut oil solidifies, exactly. Doesn't it? So
okay, I'm gonna try it.
So what are you into this week, Tilly?
Well, I was thinking because I've read Mira's book that I'm totally loving just the ground ginger in the hot water in the morning because I was like grating ginger and sometimes if I didn't have ginger I'd be like, oh, I can't do that. So realizing that you can just take a little bit of powder out of the container is like mind life-changing for me, so thanks for that. And also the cacao, because I never I had cacao and I didn't really know what to do with it, and so you said just put it in some hot milk and drink it like that. I was like, oh, okay, I'll just do that then.
That's really changed my way.
Delicious.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh my god. So I did it with and oat milk, which is quite sweet anyway, so that was
thank you so much. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Healthy Happy Home. We're so grateful to every single one of you who chooses to press play. Please connect with us over on Instagram at Healthy Happy Home Podcast. We have a heap of amazing giveaways and discounts. And remember to use the hashtag Elevation Nation.
And if you enjoy our show, why not tell your fellow elevators about us or people who you think could benefit from each episode message? Rating, reviewing and subscribing to Healthy Happy Home will also help other people to find us so that we can grow our Elevation Nation. Thank you to Mega Home Water Distillers for sponsoring this season of Healthy Happy Home. Head over to megahome-distillers.co.uk to learn more about the most reliable and efficient home drinking water distiller on the market and to benefit from a 5% discount as a listener of Healthy Happy Home by using the code HHH5 at checkout. Thank you to Mega Home.